Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Against a backdrop of uncertainty when it comes to the direction of U.S. trade policy, our focus today will be on the road ahead for the U.S. economy. With that, we are very fortunate to be joined today by Jonathan Pingle, Chief U.S. Economist with UBS Investment Bank. Jonathan, nice to have you here on Market Moves. I believe this is your first time joining us on this podcast. So thank you for spending some time today with our listeners, our clients, and very much looking forward to hearing your insights today.
Thanks very much for having me.
So a lot to cover, Jonathan. Of course, U.S. trade policy, tariffs, top of mind for many at the moment, and that seems to be driving so much of the economic and investment outlook. I'm curious, how do you anticipate that the trade environment will evolve from here, maybe over the near term and over the next year, as seemingly we're receiving new insights or headlines on a daily basis?
Yeah, I mean, I think those headlines are going to continue for a while, and I think they're going to come and go and still leave a fair amount of uncertainty about where all this is headed. You know, one of the interesting things is that the administration came out on April 2nd with, I think, an announcement of tariffs to be put in place that was, you know, well in excess, I think, of what people expected. Certainly an order of magnitude more than what was discussed on the campaign trail. Now, since then, they have postponed, one component of the so-called reciprocal tariffs. And they've also done some clarification work in trying to point out where there was overlap so that there's no double counting as well. And there have been a few carve-outs. Now, that said, the other thing we have to keep in mind is that many of the components of goods and items that have been carved out of the tariffs are also things that are under consideration for additional tariffs under other procedures, authorities, and rationales. And even if we think about all that's been, you know, double counting eliminated, what's been postponed, what is in place today is still essentially on a notional value an increase in the tax on U.S. imports 10 times. So there seems to be a certain amount of comfort that there's negotiations underway and some of the language and messaging may have become a little bit more friendly. But, you know, we're still left with a current stance of policy that represents a substantial increase in the tax on imports without a whole lot of guidance as to what happens next. Now, I do think there seem to be negotiations underway. What comes out of them, we don't know. The Treasury Secretary testified today in front of Congress that there really was no substantive discussions going on with the Chinese about their very high tariffs. So it's difficult to understand where the deals stand. I think most people expect some deals to be made, but you know what happens is incredibly uncertain. So I think the one thing we do foresee is that a certain amount of these large increases in tariffs probably are likely to remain in place for some time here.
So, Jonathan, I'm curious in terms of the impacts being felt to the U.S. economy, and I suppose time will tell, though, as we're recording here on Tuesday, May 6th, we're coming off of the April jobs report. Last Friday, last week, we also had the Q1 print for GDP. What are your thoughts on the current state health of the U.S. economy and expectations for the economy's trajectory from here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, our expectation was the economy was sort of slowly cooling. I mean, we'd see the economy was, you know, still in solid shape, but it generally sort of cooled from the very strong 23, you know, a little less strong 2024. And you know, we generally thought that process was going to continue in 2025. A lot of that was just, you know, the Biden administration, their expansive stimulus efforts sort of running their course, kind of getting back to trend. You know, and I think, you know, coming through the first quarter GDP data, there was a lot of noise due to the trade discussions, you know, imports surging, doing to try to front run tariffs. But if you looked at the core parts of domestic demand, certainly seemed to be holding up okay. And I think you saw that in the April employment report released on Friday. Our guess is that the May employment report probably looks fine, too, the one released in early June. But in next week's CPI, we are expecting that the April CPI starts on the margin to show some of the price increases. We're going to expect some of that in the May release, the May data released in June. And then in June, July, and August, you know, after, you know, some of the lags in the inflation measurement run their course, you know, some of these things are only sampled every other month. You know, there's a delay in applying tariffs to some, you know, goods that are in transit. Some things will have been in inventory. By the time we're in June, July, and August, we expect to see relatively large increases in prices. And we expect that will dent real income for households. The price level shift is going to make people feel poor, and we think that's going to be a material drag on growth in the second half of the year. So I think the economy looks pretty good, actually. Looking at the inflation data, it looked like the FOMC could have been headed for a soft landing. But when I think about what's going to happen with the tariffs being put in place, you know, the potential price increases in the coming 6 months, it does look like that will probably weigh on growth and the labor market eventually.
Some encouraging takeaways there. I know a question top of mind for many, the prospects for a recession. What are your thoughts on a potential U.S. recession on the horizon? Any signs pointing to that?
No, there are really no signs pointing to that. It really all depends on the trade policy. You know, if you think about the magnitude of what is being proposed, you know, we're not really passing through all of these things sort of one for one into prices. Some will get absorbed by the exporters. Some will might get absorbed by the currency. But we are expecting that we're probably going to have inflation go up by like roughly 2 percentage points. And if you think about what that could do to spending in the economy and the weight on even businesses, purchases, and investment, you know, it's not hard to get like a 1 percentage point drag out of these trade actions. That may or may not be a recession, but it's also somewhat uncertain. You know, my guess is that there are a lot of downside risks, and I do think we're going to go through a pretty soggy patch. And I think if somebody said a recession was a base case, a mild one, I don't think it would be, I don't think I would really argue with that. I mean, I have not been claiming my outlook is necessarily a recession, but the growth is certainly weak enough. I think ex post, you know, we could probably use the R word.
Now, the timing of our conversation, Jonathan, we will be hearing from the Fed tomorrow, Wednesday, May 7th. What do you expect to hear from the central bank? And looking out through the balance of 2025, what's your expectation for the course of monetary policy and potential rate cuts?
Tomorrow's meeting, I think, you know, I think Chair Powell's in a tough spot. I think the FOMC is, you know, he had a speech on April 16th, which I think laid out the basic, you know, message. You know, the trade actions have been, you know, much larger than the FOMC was expected, Chair Powell said. And that likely is going to be true of the economic impacts. You know, he noted that probably means higher inflation and slower growth. And he explained that that would put the Fed's, you know, the two parts of their mandate, inflation and employment, into tension if, you know, if employment's weakening and inflation is rising. So, very difficult spot for the FOMC. Chair Powell, you know, will probably lean on the more traditional language where, you know, when the goals are in tension, you know, you look at which one is further from the goal and how long is it going to take to return to the goal. And as one former central banker once said, you deal with the sicker patient. So I think at first the Fed's going to be very reluctant, you know, to respond to labor market weakness should it arise because of these upside inflation risks. But I do think at the end of the day, if the labor market does weaken, the Fed would respond to rate cuts. And I am expecting in our base case 100 basis points of rate cuts starting with the September meeting just for the FOMC to at least not make a weakening economy any weaker.
And since we're on the topic of the Fed, I've been hearing that Fed independence being a concern. How are you thinking about that, given what we've been hearing about in the headlines as of late?
Well, I think certainly there's a certain amount of public pressure being applied, given some you know, tension between the administration and the FOMC over the economic outlook and the stance of policy. But, you know, I think, you know, for the FOMC, I think thus far, you know, they are acting independent. I think they cherish their independence. And I, you know, I think Chair Powell is navigating that, you know, in my view, pretty well. You know, I think the bigger questions are going to come eventually. You know, the administration will have, you know, their own choice of Fed chair, and how close that Fed chair aligns with the White House or the White House's preferences over monetary policy remains to be seen. Now, a chair is not all powerful. You know, I mean, Chair Martin, who was the longest serving Fed chair, you know, I mean, he won a lot of votes with only one vote. The famous Paul Volcker, legendary Fed chair, actually lost a policy vote. But chairs don't always get their way. But I think, you know, over time, this administration will have a chance to put more of their personnel on the FOMC. And I think then it will become a more interesting question, you know, just how independent monetary policy really is.
Thank you, Jonathan. Very helpful context and clarity there on the Fed. Maybe one other consideration I've been hearing as well, that concern in the markets as to whether U.S. exceptionalism is over. How are you thinking about this issue?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. First of all, I mean, the American economy has a lot going for it. I mean, free markets, deep liquid capital markets, high productivity growth. But I do think that you know, if I walk forward the implications of very high tariffs, it does have the potential to undermine some of those benefits. You know, protectionism generally is not associated with rising efficiency and productivity. You know, undoing supply chains and import and trade networks is probably not pro-growth to the same extent. So, you know, we'll see how the trade policy actions play out and what the actual implications are in the data over time. But I do think that that is could represent a key turning point, you know, sort of in that narrative of exceptionalism that had sort of permeated financial markets over the last few years.
Jonathan, really do appreciate your time and covering the ground that you did for our listeners, our clients. A lot of timely topics here on the minds of many. Before we close out, any final thoughts or takeaways you would like to leave with our audience?
No, I think, I mean, if I had to think about it, you know, I think, you know, the administration is working with a number of policy levers, deregulation, fiscal policy, you know, some are pro-growth. I think the trade policy remains to be seen. I personally would argue that it's not pro-growth and of a magnitude that sort of will more than offset the positives they're talking about in the other policy priorities. However, a lot of this really remains to be seen because a lot of the policies are up to the administration itself. So I think we'll have to see what the go forward is, what the economic implications are for how this unfolds. So there's also a lot of uncertainty out there in the outlook.
Jonathan, thank you again for dropping by Market Moves to spend some time with our listeners, our clients. Would be great to have you back at some point, as these topics certainly are not going anywhere. So hope we can continue the conversation, though. Thank you again, Jonathan, for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Again, today we have been joined by Jonathan Pingle, Chief U.S. Economist with UBS Investment Bank. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.